You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
For Dear Science this week, we are joined once again by our expert Dr. Professor Alan Blackman. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Castor. And, you know, long weekends are all well and good and stuff, but then you go through Monday and you forget that you're on the radio the next day.
Yeah, right.
So you wake up at 5 o'clock and think, ooh, hang on.
And then a perfectly good Tuesday is now Monday, right? What's going on there?
I know.
Waking up this morning going, ooh, this doesn't feel quite right. But we've got lots of science to talk about,
which
is good.
We do.
Setting us apart from a normal Monday. And we're going to talk about primes, which is a particular passion of mine. We don't often talk about maths on Dear Science.
That's very true.
But I'm a big maths fan.
Good, good. And you're calling it its correct name too, which I'm very happy about.
Mathematics,
Because people call it math. And if you want to annoy me, just call it math. Oh, my goodness me. It's maths, everybody. Maths with an S. And the reason that we're talking maths today is because we now have a new largest prime number. Mm-hmm. And this prime number is 2 to the power of 136,279,841 minus 1.
Yes. Big number minus 1.
Minus 1.
Which is how we get most of our primes now, isn't it?
Well, it's how we get some of our primes, let's say. But let's have a refresher on primes school was a long time ago. So remember, a prime number is a number that can't be divided by anything other than 1 and itself.
Yep.
And so 1 is not a prime for reasons that the mathematicians would probably know better than I.
I could hazard a quick explanation in that the 1 and itself is an important criteria, and the and is not present for 1. It's just 1 and 1. It's the same thing twice.
There we go. Okay. And so the first prime number is 2, which is the only even prime number.
Perfect.
There we go. And then we go 3, 5, 7, 11, 13, 17, 19, 23, 29, 31, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay.
And they go for ages, right? Up to this large number.
Literally a squillion. Okay. Yeah. Now, how big is this number? 2 to the power of 136 million, blah, 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 minus 1. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it would take 21 standard size novels to print it out. This is the number of figures that it's got. It's got 41,024,320 digits.
Which is a lot.
It is a lot, and quite astonishingly, it's 16 million, or it's over 16 million more digits than the previous record holder.
Oh, that's a
really
lot more.
Blows my
mind. Yeah, wow. I mean,
that is just nuts. So why is this a big deal? Okay, now the thing about prime numbers is that there's no pattern to them, and there's no formula for them.
You just got to brute force it.
There's no general formula, and you know that in itself is quite astonishing to me, because nature's full of patterns. Mm-hmm. But then you get to numbers and you know interesting things like that, and there's just no pattern for primes. And as I say, there's no general formula. There's no formula that you can plug in a number to and it will spit out a prime number.
If you're looking for even numbers, you can divide by 2, and if it gives you a whole number, it's even. Right? It's very simple.
So there you go, half of your numbers straight away that can't possibly be primes.
But with a prime, it's a bit more difficult.
It is indeed. Okay. So I say that there's no general formula for primes, but there is a formula, 2 to the power of p, where p is a prime number, minus 1, can give you a prime number.
Sometimes.
Okay? Sometimes. It doesn't always work, okay? Right. So if P is a prime number, so let's try this, okay? So let's try P equals 2. So 2 to the power of 2.
4.
Minus 1.
Is 3.
Which is a prime number.
We've proved the formula.
So that works. Okay, 2 to the power of 3 is...
2 to the power of 3 is 8.
Minus 1.
Is 7. And there's also another prime number. Okay. Wow.
We think we're on the money here. This is looking good.
It's looking quite good.
And it works for 2 and 3 and 5 and 7.
Yeah, once you get to 2 to the...
Once you get to the 11. Once you get to 11, it doesn't work for 11. 2 to the power of 11 is 2048.
2047 probably
is divisible by 23. Apparently.
Yeah, some useless other prime. That's the problem with those primes. They're always divisible by some other primes, or not primes, rather.
So this is a formula that works sometimes, okay? Mm. We're thinking, yeah, well, you know, it started off really well, but in fact, it only works for 52 prime numbers. That's it.
Oh.
That's it.
That's quite inconsistent.
And these have special names. They're called Mersenne primes, after this French mathematician from the 17th or 18th century or whatever that sort of came up with this. And you might think, well, that's a bit useless. If it only works for 52 prime numbers, then, hell, it's hardly even a formula.
Mm.
But the beauty of it is that it's worked in order to give us this now new largest prime number.
Ah, so previously we were saying only works for 51.
Yes, indeed. absolutely. So this, right. This is now the 52nd number for which it works. And you might think, okay, whoop-de-doo. So, you know, so what? How did they find this, first of all? Mm. Well, obviously they weren't brute-forcing these things.
No.
So they basically have got this thing that is called the Great Internet Mersenne Prime Search, which has the very amusing acronym of GIMPS.
Ah, that is a good acronym.
Of course it does, okay. And a guy by the name of Luke Durant has been doing this online, along with lots and lots of other volunteers who are giving their time and, I guess, energies to looking for the biggest prime numbers and, you know, doing all this on the cloud and everything and blah, 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 blah. And you might think, yep, okay, that's great, whip-de-doo.
What do we do?
But why?
Yeah, why do we have this new prime number? What does it serve?
Well, number one, it's now the largest known prime number. I mean, that's a reason for
Yeah, beating a record is always great.
But the other thing is that prime numbers are extremely important when it comes to cryptography.
Mm.
Very, very, very important. So you might think, well, so what's cryptography got to do with anything? Well, anytime you visit a website and put in a password and stuff like that, you are hoping like heck that cryptography is working for you.
Yep.
And that everything is shielded from, you know, prying eyes and all that sort of stuff. So there is a thing called RSA encryption.
Yes, that's the standard, right?
It is the standard.
Standard RSA encryption.
And surprisingly to me, this was invented way back in the 70s.
Wow.
Which is amazing.
If it ain't broke, right?
Well, it's not broke yet. But this works on the idea that if you take two very large prime numbers and multiply them together, then you get a very, very big number.
That's very difficult to
factorize.
Yes.
And that's why this system, for the moment, is so secure, because it's really hard to get the factors of a massive number.
Mm-hmm.
So if you multiply primes together to get this massive number, then that massive number is only going to have those two prime numbers as its factors. Okay, so you're not going to sort of stumble upon, you know, three or five or seven.
Yeah, it'll be like some larger numbers. Yeah.
And so that's the basis of the cryptography that is used around the world and is, you know, pretty much unbreakable because of the fact of the sheer size and therefore the sheer time that it's going to take anybody to crack this. But with the advent of quantum computing, people are saying, well, this might not be so great because quantum computing is going to be, you know, orders of magnitude faster than what we already have.
Right.
So this may be something that has to be looked at in the future. But for the moment, we have ourselves a new world record prime number. Look for it in a Guinness Book of Records near you.
Yeah, incredible stuff. And then this next guy, Carl, I think I mispronounced the name.
Jurassi? Jurassi, yeah.
Jurassi.
Yep. Carl Jurassi.
Inventor of two incredible things.
Well, he would have been 101 today, which is why we're talking about him.
Yep.
I'm a great believer in birthdays and anniversaries and stuff and things and et cetera, et cetera. And he made a discovery in 1951 that changed the world.
Mm.
And he was a chemist, okay?
Yep.
And he changed the world. He literally changed the world. This is probably one of the two greatest chemistry inventions, I think, of the 20th century, and he didn't win the Nobel Prize for it.
What was the other before we get to this
one? What was the other? The other is probably plastics.
Ah, that makes sense.
Dare I say it? Okay. So everyone's sitting there on tenterhooks saying, gosh, what could this be? What could this be? So Jurassi was doing some chemistry down in Mexico, and what he was looking for was a way to make cortisone.
Mm-hmm.
So cortisone was a treatment for arthritis, still is.
Yep.
Okay, so cortisone injections, etc., etc. So cortisone is a steroid. Okay, what we call a steroid, it's a particular class of compounds that contain rings of different sizes, 3 6-membered rings and a 5-membered ring, if you're interested. But so what he was doing down in Mexico was he was using Mexican yams as a source of a precursor molecule for cortisone. And this is a molecule called diosgenin. Okay. And it also just happens that diosgenin was also a starting material for the synthesis of a thing called progestogen. And that's the synthetic version of the female sex hormone.
Yes.
And you might now try to figure out what it is. With this. So Jurassic in 1951 basically made the pill.
Yep.
Essentially. And I contend that, you know, that changed society.
Oh, it certainly did, right?
It absolutely changed society for the better, of course. And so for this extraordinary, extraordinary, extraordinary discovery, he wasn't awarded the Nobel Prize. He was awarded things like the Priestley Medal, which is the highest medal for the American Chemical Society. He was awarded the National Medal of Science for the US. He was, as far as we know, nominated at least 7 times for the Nobel Prize.
Wow.
and the only reason we know that is that when you're nominated for the Nobel Prize, you've got to wait 50 years to find out whether you're nominated or not.
Oh.
So they keep all the nominations secret for 50 years.
Right.
So he will certainly have been nominated more than that.
Right, I see.
And never won. So as a result in of his discovery in 1951, by the time 1957 rolled along, the FDA had approved the first birth control pill. Following human trials in Puerto Rico.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting in itself.
Yep.
That they didn't do these human trials in the States. Or I guess you could say that Puerto Rico is part of the States.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting there.
But you know, he missed out in a big way. He also did other great work, things like antihistamines and stuff like that. But you know, this is his massive achievement. And, yeah, I think it's a shame he didn't win the big prize for that. I think that's a glaring error.
Massive props to Carl there. Yeah, and then this last bit, recycling e-waste, talking about gold, right?
Yeah. So I guess with the advent of computers and stuff and things, there's an awful lot of interesting materials that go into computers, including things like gold and silver and rare earth metals, these sorts of things, which are in themselves quite valuable. But when you know, actually put them into a device, be it a phone or a computer or what like that, they are there in relatively small amounts in each device. But then when you consider the number of devices that we end up chucking
throwing out
every
heaps
year,
of phones every year,
then you would think, oh, gosh, maybe
that's a lot of gold.
Maybe it might be an idea if we can recover that. Now, this is not a new idea. Well, obviously, with respect to computers and stuff, it is. But way back in the early 20th century, a guy by the name of Fritz Haber, who was a Nobel Prize winner himself, he thought, whew, okay, I'm German. We've just had this big war. We've got all of these debts that we've got to pay off. I know there's gold in seawater. Why the heck don't we just extract the gold from seawater and pay off our war reparations like that?
That makes sense.
Now, in terms of seawater, there's 1 microgram of gold per ton of seawater.
That doesn't work out particularly well in his favour.
A ton of seawater is a cubic metre.
Yep.
So if you think about it, it's quite a big volume and you've only got a millionth of a gram. So you're going to have to treat a buttload of seawater to make that one viable. Of course, he never did. But now we're working with e-waste in terms of things like parts per million, 3 or so parts per million of e-waste. Is that viable to be able to extract the gold from that? Well, there's a bunch of workers in Singapore, China, and the UK who've just published a paper where they're using essentially what you call pretty much natural products. So a thing called graphene oxide, which is just graphite, a single layer of graphite, the lead in your pencil, and they treat that with oxidizing agents to make graphene oxide, and a thing called chitosan, which comes from chitin, which is the shell of your lobster or shrimp or whatever like that. So a natural product, and they treat that in some ways. And they end up with a mixture of these two things, graphene oxide, chitosan, and what they've found is that they can take this aqueous e-waste solution, so this solution where all of the gold and everything has been dissolved up, stick the stuff in it. So the graphene oxide grabs onto the gold.
Separates everything out.
Ions. And then the chitosan reduces the aqueous gold into solid.
gold. That's very convenient.
Which is really seriously...
It's a magic substance there.
That's seriously clever. I wish I'd thought of that. But, you know, at the moment, it's not the easiest to recover this waste. There's a company in Auckland, actually, that does this called Mint Innovation, and they're doing spectacular work in this area. But this, you know, this new method apparently is about 10 times better than anything else on the market at the moment.
That's pretty good.
You know, and it's not dirty. It's not wasteful. You know, this they're just making essentially a sponge of this of these two components.
Yes.
Run your water through it, get the gold out of the sponge. You know, so this is very, very clever stuff, and I expect this is going to make a big difference to the economics, I guess, of e-waste recovery, which could only be a good thing.
Yeah, and we'll probably end up recycling more out of it as well, which is great.
Amen.
All right. Well, lots of feel-good stories this week. We've learned a lot about science and the great things it can do. All right. Well, thank you, Alan, for coming in this week. Talk to you in a fortnight. Thank you, Motat, and thank you, Science. We'll be right back after a short break. Keep it on the B.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.